So I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for showing up. So my story is very strange. I didn't start as a social entrepreneur from day one. When I was 9 years old, I wanted to be a clothing designer, and I drew all these different sketches, and my mom was so convinced, because I was obsessed with it, that I'd be a clothing designer one day, and she ended up framing one of my drawings. And surely enough, a couple years later, when I was 19, my college roommate and I decided to start our clothing company. And we started this clothing company because we were super tired of all the baggy unisex t-shirts that they would sell at band concerts. And we really wanted clothing that would look good on us. And when my roommate was like, why don't we start a clothing company? You're good at drawing. I was just so thrilled. I was like, yes, like my dreams are finally coming true. Let's do this. And we just spent days like furiously sketching our clothing line in our college dorm room. And eventually we launched our first our summer line at like a music festival. And we ended up selling out our hoodies. And it just got wildly successful by accident. We didn't have this set formula. You know, I was doing the sketches, I was doing the operations and doing the financials, and she was networking like crazy. But it ended up in People Magazine, and Miley Cyrus was wearing our hoodie. We had Katy Perry, Taylor Swift. It was insane. Like, we just didn't know what to do with what we were creating. We ended up in 250 retailers, because the demand just got so insane. And, you know, at this point in my life, I was, you know, 22, and I was actually very sad. I wasn't excited at all with what we were creating, and it was such a weird moment for me, because my whole life I was told, you know, if you found that one thing you're good at, go for it. Like, it's yours now. You have everything set up to create an empire now. Why don't you take it further? Why aren't you happy? And it was something that was really embarrassing for me to admit to myself, but I was kind of like, if I keep doing this, I'm just gonna become depressed, and I'm just gonna, you know, dig my own grave here. You know, what am I doing? So I kind of swallowed my pride, and we luckily had someone that wanted to buy the company from us, so that was exactly what we did. So from there, I was, you know, pursuing this degree in design strategy and business for my undergrad, and I remember I was at a lecture one day, and this professor was telling us about climate change and how designers could use their design and business acumen to actually do something about it, and I was kind of like, what? And it was so mind-blowing for me, because when you're in a classroom setting, you're kind of always told of these are all the other great people throughout history that has done great stuff. There's never any mention of where your place is in that. So when this professor told us that we could actually do something to fight climate change, fight poverty, it kind of blew my mind. And from there, it just really snowballed of me just like tugging on this string of curiosity of, what does that look like? What does it look like when people from different backgrounds, you know, merge into this NGO space, merge into social impact? I kept researching it, and I realized that it's actually very, very powerful. You know, when we intersect and introduce new ideas, we experiment, we get a little weird with, like, figuring out how to bring clean water to someone, figuring out how to get hospital supplies to a disaster area that just got hit by a hurricane. You can actually come up with really innovative and impactful solutions. So from there, I actually spent a year studying this. You know, I spent a whole year doing my senior thesis on it. I just really dug into it. And when I graduated, I did what I think everyone my age would have done. I ended up getting a corporate job. And it was for a reason, though. I was in a place of, I applied to every single nonprofit that I wanted to be at, you know, places that I wanted to get a job. I got rejected from every single one. And I just, at that point, I just didn't know how to step up for my ambitions and my dreams when no one out there was willing to take me in. So I worked at this corporate job, but I really took advantage of it. I really figured out, like, what am I good at? Let me take this opportunity to really hone in on my skills here. And I learned a lot. My project management skills came from this place. My crisis management really developed at this job. So I was super thankful for that. And I got to this point in my life where after 7 months of being at that job, I realized I can't do this anymore. I'm at my wit's end here. I can't fake it anymore. I don't know what I'm gonna do next, but I'm just gonna take a leap of faith and see what happens. So the day that I gave my 2 weeks, had my 2 weeks, went out to celebrate with my coworkers. And oddly enough, I ended up meeting my co-founder there that would start Water Collective with me. And we talked, and he's like, listen, I've been wanting to start a water organization my whole life, and my friend Roxanne here tells me that you know how to start businesses. So from there, it was just this strange moment of clarity for me where it just felt like the universe was telling me everything is lining up here. This is the right time. Go for it. So that was exactly what I did. So Josh and I started Water Collective, and we were so excited. And we're just like, oh man, like we're going to be the next big thing. Our organization is going to be huge. And we ended up for a whole year, you know, trying to start projects in Uganda, Burundi, Kenya. All of them fell by the wayside. Nothing was sticking. So we were getting really frustrated. But we had this one lead where it was a farmer that we had never met before, had no connection to him. A farmer in a rural community in Cameroon that said, hey, I'm inviting you guys to come to my village. I really want to work with you to help bring a water system to my community. Can you help? So two of us, two crazy ambitious entrepreneurs, probably all very, very naive, we went out to Cameroon. And from there, it just grew very organically. And it was, oddly enough, exactly how we wanted it to roll out. Because from the very start, the reason why my co-founder, you know, wanted to start a water organization on his own was because he had been doing these development projects since he was 15 years old, and he was just so discouraged by the fact that half of the water projects he was seeing in these communities, they were broken. They weren't working anymore. So whatever system we have right now when it comes to water, it's not working, so why am I going to personally work for that NGO? Why am I contributing to their hot mess that they're, like, regurgitating? So, you know, it really made sense at the end of the day, even though it was super frustrating for a year, that, of course, why didn't we see this? We should have started this organization with the rural community, like, directly from the source, rather than thinking of NGOs to partner with and who's in Burundi, who's in Kenya, let's link up with them. So it actually ended up working out really well for us, and yet still, it wasn't smooth sailing. You know, Cameroon is a very difficult country in the sense that the roads are complete mud for half of the year. So when it comes to aligning your funding schedule, aligning who's available to work for you at this time of the month, making sure that that one driver that knows how to drive on those roads, because that's usually the case, making sure all three of those schedules align is just, it never works out. So we had to deal with things like that, just a lot of political struggles, a lot of community struggles that we just never anticipated before, and no one ever talks about. No one ever talks about this unglamorous side of doing development work. So, you know, we were so confused and so overwhelmed by the amount of challenges we were facing as a nonprofit startup, and we tried to do everything and anything to figure out, okay, we want to create the most impact. Like, let's do this program. Let's do a water, clean water program, a sanitation program, and an income-generating activity program. And we kept trying all these things that people in our industry were telling us should work. But at the end of the day, when it came to the nitty-gritty and actually executing, it didn't. So we were in this really frustrating place, and one of our board members sat us down, and he said to us, listen, I have one piece of advice for you, and it's this. Pick one thing and get really good at it. So we're like, okay, pick one thing. One thing. We have these three amazing programs. What do? Which one do we pick? And we really dug into what were our core values, and the thing that we kept coming back to were these broken water projects we were seeing. And so we really dove into that. That was the one aspect of these water projects that was really killing us on the inside. Like, why hasn't someone figured this out? So we pursued that for a year, and it was the best decision we ever made. You know, it really exploded into something magical for us. Like, you know, we developed a program called Water Independence from it. We ended up being recognized in Forbes, Elle Magazine for it. Like, it was something that really catapulted us to the next level. And it was because of this one simple question of, like, what are you, focus on one thing, right? And also, like, figuring out, like, what are our core desires and our values when it comes to the water crisis. So it had nothing to do with, like, any formula or what the industry said that we should have done. So that was an incredible moment for us. And why did I tell you, like, this whole evolution of my career? And I think, like, the importance of why I tell my story this way is because I would have never gotten to where I am today unless I honored that evolution. You know, I think that growing up, my parents and my friends' parents, like, all of our parents had one career their whole lives. Like, we have never seen anyone amongst my friends, like, switch careers or transition. And therefore, when I was in this place of my life where I had this clothing company that I created and it was fantastic, but I wanted nothing to do with it, instead of feeling grateful that I had that experience and recognizing it as an evolution in my life, I saw it as, like, a failure, and I had all this guilt about it. So I tell you this whole story because I think that what I'm seeing and I'm observing in this space right now and with this generation is that people are starting to really honor their evolution now, is that they're understanding that it's not just going to be one thing that you're going to have career-wise your whole life. It's going to evolve, and the moment that you honor that evolution is the moment that you really strike gold. You really strike, like, that one career that everyone dreams about, this dream career that they love getting up in the morning for it. They love the money that they're making. They love the impact that they're creating. They love, like, the macro giving back aspect that it's giving back to the world, if, whether it's people or planet. So that's one aspect. And another aspect I really want to hone in on here is this aspect of understanding that when it comes to building a startup, it's never going to be this correct formula or a preset. Like, you can follow as many equations that you want. You can follow the lean startup model, which is a great model. But when at the end of the day, what you really need to think about is you're an entrepreneur, and you have all the power to create this startup into whatever you want it to be. And from my experience, what I've seen is that the social entrepreneurs that are truly innovative are the ones that understand that this is my company, and I can do whatever I want with it. I don't have to create what Bill Gates and Melinda Gates say that I should be doing. I don't have to listen to all these thought leaders and follow their exact formula. My core value is, for example, I love going to conferences and I love networking with people. Or I love, you know, sitting in an office and doing Excel spreadsheets and, like, sorting through data. Or I love doing fundraising events, and I just really want to fundraise for other charities. It's starting from that place of what do I really love doing, and then let me attach, like, whether it's the cause is, like, I love, you know, working on education initiatives. I love working on community empowerment, women's empowerment. Having your core value first, because at the end of the day, you know, you can you can follow whichever formula you want, whether it's building a NGO that is building new schools, or it's a social enterprise that is giving back for every purchase that a consumer makes of your product. But at the end of the day, you're the one, like, in your office or at your desk, like, hammering away and, like, really building this startup. And if you don't love what you're doing on a day-to-day, where is it going to be 5 years from now? It's probably not going to exist if you hate doing the day-to-day stuff. So, like, make it fun for yourself. You know, figure out, like, if you are really into throwing events, like, make your NGO or your social enterprise revolve around events. You know, really honor the fact that you are your own boss here, and social innovation comes from that, you know, weird mixture of, like, who is this person that's leading this startup, and what is the cause that they're really passionate about? Like, show us what you've got here. So that's something that I really like to hammer in when I talk to social entrepreneurs, and just something that, you know, I struggled with for years, where I was just, like, doing everything that people were telling me to do, and I was so frustrated when I wasn't seeing results, and it was because I was listening to what other people were telling me to do. I wasn't listening to myself, and that was, like, the huge realization that I had that I hope that other people will take to heart. Another thing is, so when my friends and I, we all started our startups around 2008, 2011, and at that time, it was just, like, a super inspiring time where President Obama, Governor or Senator Obama, I forget what he was back then, was running for president, and he had this super inspiring message. So we had this culture where you have this guy who came from absolutely nothing. He really came out of nowhere, and he had this super inspiring message, incredible leader, integrity, and you had that to model. And as social entrepreneurs, just to be surrounded by that environment and that energy, it was just so contagious to us. So we were building in that space. And today, social entrepreneurs are building in an environment that I don't even know what it is. It's a very confusing, it's a very negative space. Just a lot of horrible issues here when it comes to racism. You're seeing major political candidates that are spinning that. They're spinning racism, dividing people according to their sexual preference, gender. It's very hard for me to watch, because it's kind of like, oh my goodness, if my generation of social entrepreneurs, like, we were born and the seeds were sown from this place of inspiration, what's going to happen to the social entrepreneurs that are coming out now? You know, is it going to inspire you all, or is it going to scare you to be like, well, the world is this way now, and I really just don't want to deal with it. There's just too many problems to tackle here. So, but despite that, I really have a lot of hope, and this is why. I think that the generation, the millennials that are growing up now, you all are growing up in a environment that is so different from when I was, you know, building my startup, in the sense that when you open your Facebook, for example, you have access to all this information that it took me months for me to research when I was growing up and building my startup. You know, if you want to see a refugee live stream their day, you can do that. Or if you want to, you know, you want to tweet someone in Kenya about, you know, how many broken water projects are there in your vicinity, like, you can actually ask someone that. You have access to all this information. You know, people are sharing videos all the time about what's happening in Syria. You know, this is what's going on with Ebola. There's just so much information that people are exposed to just by opening up their social feeds. And you don't even realize it, but you're getting educated in international development. Like, you're seriously, like, on a day-to-day, you're building this, like, bachelor's degree in international development, and you really have an incredible depth and understanding and empathy, because people on the ground are sharing their experiences, and you just have this incredible gamut and, like, this knowledge and toolbox that I never had growing up So I'm pretty hopeful, and because you guys already are so much smarter than I was when I was building my startup. Like, you have a huge leg up. So I think that despite, on a macro level, what it looks like politically, and it could be very, very depressing at times, I also think that you all are in an incredible time and incredibly empowered to make an incredible change. You know, you all are capable of creating incredible ripple effects and changing things to the next level, that, and you don't even know it.